Hi, I'm Jay from JinxNavigator.com, and this is my podcast. We're making our way through all of the issues of The Jinx. It's a newsletter for magicians and mentalists that lasted from 1934 to 1941, and a lot of what we do as mystery performers can be traced back to something from The Jinx. This is the podcast where we browse through every issue and find out how many of the ideas are still usable today. And spoiler alert, the answer is just about all of them. We're looking at issue number 17 today, which contains the editorial by Theodore Animan, Cigarettes in the Dark by Animan, The Spectator's Choice by Stuart Judah, To Our Associated Dealers by Burling Hall, Finger Exercise by Otis Manning, A Novel Glass Through Hat by Alvin C. Thompson, and The Origin and History of the Torn Deck Trick by Julian J. Proskauer. Welcome back to Jinx Navigator. Issue number 17 opens with a warning that Animan feels strongly enough about to lead with. Don't do sleight of hand in front of cameras. He mentions two specific cases, Dave Allison with a birdcage vanish and Russ Walsh with a golf stick to handkerchief effect. Both are performers that Animan respects. Neither, he suspects, deliberately set out to expose anything, but a lens that can catch a bullet in flight isn't going to miss a slight, and no amount of explanation after the fact changes what the film shows. His advice is simple. If you're going to work in front of a camera, do something mechanical and hidden. Please, nobody tell him about YouTube. From there, a few notes on the state of publishing in magic. UF Grant has released something called Magic Eye, built around a photoelectrical principle. Animan calls it a clear adaptation of modern science. Percy Abbott's new The Tops has turned out to be worthwhile, with good tricks and a strong roster of contributors. Less charitable is Animan's treatment of something called The Lynx, a nameless free publication whose anonymous editor promises to reveal the merciless truth about everything. Animan's commentary is, "It must be quite a comedown to have to publish anonymously and for free in order to get read." He also apologizes, somewhat reluctantly, for the delayed winter extra, explaining that he spent the stretch between Christmas and press time on tour with a nightclub review, working four shows a night, while simultaneously keeping mail answered and getting out one issue of The Jinx and one of the Jordan series. He promises not to get caught for time again. Two practical items round out the editorial. A correspondent named Clement de Leon, writing from France, offers a tidy improvement on forcing with a single die. And Ben Badley of St. Louis passes along a tip for card workers who want their decks to fan smoothly. Find out what they suggest in the editorial at JinxNavigator.com. This one is from Animan, Cigarettes in the Dark, and it taps into a publicity angle that was big in the mid-1930s. Old Gold Cigarettes had run promotions around blindfolded tobacco identification, and a number of performers picked up the thread. Here's what an audience sees. Several packs of cigarettes are opened and dumped into a hat or bowl. The performer is blindfolded by a helper, and then reaching into the hat, the performer pulls out a cigarette, puts it in his mouth, gets it lit by the helper, takes a puff, and names the brand. Tossed aside. Another drawn, same test. Three times total, three correct identifications. So the blindfold is genuine. What isn't genuine is where these cigarettes are coming from. Cigarette dropper under the coat, same apparatus that Fisher described a couple of issues back. It's loaded with three brands in a known order before the performance. The hat's just propped, and the reach toward it covers the actual retrieval each time. Animan notes that he has tried it and knows it works. So even if you have a room full of smokers today, there are a bazillion places that won't let you light up. But you could use the same idea with other items. Pass a bowl around and have everyone who has any change to drop one coin in as it passes as you're being blindfolded. When it gets back to you, reach in and grab a coin. Did you see my air quotes? And then reveal that it's a nickel or dime or whatever, and you'll probably get a laugh. And then pass it to someone saying, and check that the date on that is 2014. While all eyes are on the person confirming the date, you have the perfect opportunity to steal the next coin. Full details on the original cigarette version can be found at JinxNavigator.com. The Spectator's Choice is from Stuart Judah, and he opens with an honest admission. The effect didn't look like much on paper, and he set it aside. Then he saw it performed. Then he started doing it himself. So here's what happens. Six piles of five cards each are dealt face down. The helper picks any two cards from the rest of the deck, writes both card names on a slip of paper, and the paper goes face down on the table. He then places one card each on top of any two of the piles. The performer also writes two card names on a separate slip, face down on the other side of the table. Cards are dealt into two heaps, one at a time, alternating back and forth. The helper is told to choose keep his pair or keep the performer's pair. Whatever he decides, dealing procedure begins that eliminates cards in one heap at a time and ends with exactly the two cards written on the chosen slip. The method, it belongs to the Magician's Choice Club. Judah's construction is particularly clean because both slips appear to be independent predictions, and the helper genuinely doesn't know until the very end which two cards they'll be left holding. If you want full details on this, you know where to get it, jinxnavigator.com. The next item to our associated dealers is another piece of the ongoing Burling Hall saga, this time a letter Hall sent directly to Magic dealers printed in the Jinx in full. Hall addresses a circular sent by a publication he refers to only as the Stinks, the nickname Anneman had been using for the Lynx, the anonymous newsletter mentioned in this issue's editorial. Hull's attorney, who is also a member of the IBM and the SAM, has characterized the attacks in that publication as a perfect case of libel by innuendo. Hull states he's proceeding with a lawsuit and filing with the U.S. Post Office to have the publication's mailing privileges revoked. The practical point of the letter is directed at the dealers themselves. Distributing defamatory material through the mail could make them liable alongside the publisher. He recommends they consult their own attorneys. Letter closes with a postscript about the importance of friendly relations in the magic trade, that feuds distract customers, disgust them with the art, and ultimately hurt everyone's business. Anneman prints the whole thing without editorial comment, and you can see that at jinxnavigator.com. And now it's time for Finger Exercise from Otis Manning, and it's a thimble routine framed as a demonstration of finger dexterity. The setup is simple. Two thimbles, one red on the index finger, one blue on the middle finger of the same hand. The hand waves, and the red thimble appears to jump over the blue to land on the ring finger. It's put back on the index finger, it jumps again, this is repeated a couple times. Then the performer offers the harder version, both thimbles changing places simultaneously. The red ends up where the blue was and vice versa. This is repeated as well, and for a finish, someone is invited to remove both thimbles and try it themselves. Back in the day, I always wanted to do a cool thimble routine, but that was also back in the day when people knew what thimbles were. So, Anneman's note on this is worth passing along. He says he can't do many sleights himself, but this one works because it relies only on the simplest thimble steel, and there's no vanish anywhere in the routine. Just a series of apparent transpositions that look impossible and feel completely fair. Manning closes with a note about patter. Never mention you're using two thimbles, and learn when to talk and when not to. You can get the details on that thimble routine at jinxnavigator.com. This one is from Alvin C. Thompson, a novel glass through hat, and it's a quick, punchy penetration effect using props that most performers already have. A drinking glass with a red silk handkerchief inside is placed on the table. A sheet of paper is draped over the glass, taking on its shape. You know where this is going. A borrowed hat goes on top, and the performer pushes down. The glass and handkerchief pass through the crown of the hat and appear inside of it. The key is a moment early in the routine where the paper-covered glass is briefly placed inside the hat on a seemingly incidental pretext. Everybody here has done the salt shaker through table, yes? Okay, same thing. Thompson's note on performance is direct, do it smartly, with no stalling, and get to the climax as quickly as possible. You can get all the details on this at jinxnavigator.com. Final issue in issue 17 is from Julian Proskauer, the SAM's national president, who we heard from in issue 16's editorial, and it's a combination historical essay and performance piece, The Origin and History of the Torn Deck. Proskauer opens with a brisk observation about originality in magic. Whenever a magician announces, "This is an original effect," he smiles skeptically. The method doesn't really matter, he argues. What counts is the effect on the audience. With that settled, he describes an effect he's been doing in one form or another for close to 20 years. A card is freely selected, returned to the deck, and passed to the top. The performer then tears the deck in half, or appears to, and through a dealing procedure with audience members calling stop, the two halves of the selected card are eventually produced and matched, and they fit perfectly. Proskauer walks through three versions of the presentation across different eras. The original with the saw, which he admits was impractical, the cards kept slipping, an updated version where the performer claims to have been reading Physical Culture magazine and tears the deck with his bare hands, and a 1936 version where the deck is split in two, the helper gets one half, and both performer and helper tear their packets simultaneously before the selected card is ultimately reassembled from the pieces. His closing note is characteristic. He claims no originality for the trick itself, which he traces back at least 75 years. What he does claim is having been the one to bring it back to light. Anneman prints it without changing a word. Full details are at jinxnavigator.com. And that's it for this episode of the Jinx Navigator podcast. To see every article in every issue of the Jinx, go to jinxnavigator.com and sign up. I know you can afford it because it's completely free. Use the contact form on that site. Let me know what you think of the podcast, good or bad. I'm Jay Jennings from jinxnavigator.com, and I hope you join me again next time when we explore issue 18, which includes Death Flight by Tom Sellers. And I thank you in advance for helping spread the word about this, the Jinx Navigator podcast. See you next week.